get back into the book of Romans, we remember that those first 11 chapters laid the foundation of doctrine, of teaching, of what God did through the gospel and how Jesus Christ came to save us from God's wrath. And then in chapter 12 begins the application. In other words, the first 11 chapters, what we should believe. Chapters 12 and following, what we should do as a result of those beliefs. And starting in Romans chapter 12, verse 9, we have this phrase, let love be genuine. And I told you that in the Greek, it just says genuine love. Like it's a heading, like we're going to get that definition of what genuine love looks like. And in verses 9 through 13, Paul gives us love of God and our brethren. And we saw that genuine love looked like training our desires to detest what is evil and be devoted to God. We are to devote in genuine love ourselves to our brothers and sisters in Christ, showing that we value them by putting them first and ministering to their needs above ourselves. And then fervent, genuine love is dedicating yourself to faithfully serving the Lord with your best until He calls you home. Faithful service to Him. Then verses 14 and then verses 17 through 21 talk about love of our enemies, those who oppress us or mock us. Genuine love responds to persecution by praying for God to show His divine favor towards your enemies. Genuine love responds to unfair treatment by honoring God before others while striving for peace. We're to be peacemakers with those who try to persecute us. And then genuine love never takes justice into its own hands, but instead looks to the needs of their enemies. We leave vengeance to the Lord. And so with all that, then Paul goes into how we should respond to our governmental authorities and those type of things. And he talks about that wonderful subject of paying taxes. Everybody likes that, right? When I was home, just as an aside, when I was home for my dad's memorial service, there were, he had donated his body to the osteopathic school, and so people were giving testimonies about different people, very emotional, time, and so you know me by now, I'm a weeper, and so people are telling these wonderful stories, and I'm gonna blubber through my testimony. My mom says, the day before we go there, she says, you've got your words prepared, right, for what you're going to say about your dad. And I'm like, okay, no, I'm not ready. So anyway, I put these things, I'm already crying. And so I said, well, I need to tell a joke. So I told him, I said, you know, there's two phrases that you should never trust. I'm with the IRS and I'm here to help you. And then number two is, I'm a pastor. And I have a few words to share with you. Okay? And then I told him, I said, I'm not with the IRS. So, but I shared some thoughts about Dad. But taxes, we're to pay our taxes. And it's just a duty that we have as Christians, because our taxes in general go to the benefit of our common man. And so it is a way of showing love for those who are less fortunate than us, and to provide things for the general good of our communities. So Paul talks about that in those first seven verses. And then in verse 7 he says, pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, and respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. And then we come to Romans 13, verse 8, where he says this, owe no one anything except to love each other. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, or any other commandment are summed up in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Paul finishes up about taxes and community tariffs and different things like that and respect and honor. And he says, pay what you owe. And he says, owe no one anything. Now, just a quick note on finances, because some people take this passage and they make the mistake of saying, well, you should never borrow money, where he says, owe no one anything. If incurring indebtedness was wrong, then Jesus would not have said in Matthew 5:42, give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. The one who borrows from you, then owes you, right? They have to repay you. So it's okay to owe something, but what Paul is getting at here is don't overextend yourself. In other words, it's okay to take out a loan, but you need to pay whatever you're indebted to pay, and you're to do it on schedule. And so when you receive a bill payment, then you pay that bill. Or a loan payment, you pay that loan. And you don't overextend yourself. You are responsible with your money, but you can work out the details of your loan to where you make your payment, and then you don't owe them anything until the next month. Okay? And that's just an aside. If you disagree with me on that, you can talk to me or you can read Jesus' words and tell me what Jesus meant when he said it's okay for you to borrow. I don't think he wants us participating in sinful activities. Do you? Okay. So that's the side note on finances. But Paul does say here, hey, listen, don't owe anybody anything. In other words, be responsible with your finances. He says, but I want you to owe some people something. Verse 8, owe no one anything except the debt we owe to love one another. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. Here we see our obligation or debt to love others. This debt of love is owed to all mankind. It's to everyone, not just Christians. The debt of love spoken of here is to our fellow humans. Now, Paul has stated earlier that we are free from the law. We are free from the obligations of the law. He said that earlier in the book of Romans. It's a very integral part of the doctrines that he taught us and that God has for us. Paul says we are free from the law, but now he lets us know that while we're not obligated to the law, we are obligated or in debt to others. And that debt we owe them is love. The lawyer once posed this question to Jesus, well, who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? Because we're to love our neighbor as ourselves. And from the parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus taught that one's neighbor is anyone bearing God's image. That's our neighbor. See, the Samaritan came across a person who was a stranger to him, so emotional love is not required in order to love your neighbor, because the Samaritan showed love to a total stranger. The man was robbed of all his money. He had nothing, so there was no reasonable expectation of being repaid. You see, it's all of grace, the love that we show. We don't love expecting love in return. It's all of grace, just like our salvation. See, the Samaritan spent 2 days' wages on a man whom he didn't know, and he didn't know whether he would ever be able to repay him. In fact, that man didn't even know who he was. When's the last time you spent 2 days' wages on a stranger? Loving others transcends human boundaries, because the whole thing is the fellow that's hurt is assumed to be Jewish, because Jesus is speaking to a Jewish crowd, but the Samaritan is someone that was despised by the Jews. So loving others transcends human boundaries like race, boundaries like religion, socioeconomic status, no matter how rich or poor you are, politics, whether you're Democrat, Republican, Independent, Marxist, whatever, our nationality, our status with the government, whether we're legal or illegal. My neighbor is anyone bearing God's image. Owe no one anything except the debt we owe to love each other. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. When it says the one who loves another, that literally means the other. For the one who loves the other has fulfilled the law. Robert Mounce has a great way with words. He's a theologian who wrote a commentary on the book of Romans. He had this to say about this passage, that about how it reads the other. The love that fulfills the law is a love that goes out to the specific person who at that particular moment confronts us in need. The one whom God has brought across our path and who therefore has a claim on our service. A good case can be made for the proposition that love exists only in actual deeds of love. Abstractions are convenient for philosophical discourse, but are without substance and have no value for those in need. We are to love the other, the neighbor who is there, whose need has a claim on our time and energy because God brought that person across our path at that particular moment in time. Robert Mounce. We are to love the other. We have a debt to pay to the others. You see, Christians are free from the law, but obligated to love others. The application. I have a debt of love that is always owed, but never fully paid to my fellow man. Always owed, but never fully paid to my fellow man. It is that debt of love. Love is an action verb. Anytime we see love described in the scriptures, it's always using action verbs. It's not that old warm fuzzy feeling that we have, or that tingly feeling that we get. It's not that. Biblical love is an active love. Love is so important in the ethics of the Bible. Because God is what? Love. God is love. In fact, Paul goes on in verse 9 to tell us that love is the essence of the Mosaic law. He says, "For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment," there's over 600 of them in the Old Testament, "are summed up in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Love is the essence of the Mosaic law. Paul quotes the commandments pertaining to our relationship with our fellow man. We are to love God and we're to love others. Two great commandments. Paul uses the word here, summed up. He says they are summed up in this word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus used the word depend. Depend. Like a door depends or hangs upon hinges. Matthew 22:36, Jesus was posed a question. It says, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets." Like the door that hangs on its hinges, all of the law hangs upon those two commandments. Love of God and love of neighbor. So, Everett Harrison says in his commentary, the relationship between love and law. Because we wonder, we look at these 600 commandments in the Old Testament and we wonder things. But he says this, "To love others with the love that Christ exhibited is his new commandment. And if this love is present, it will make possible the keeping of all his other commandments. Love promotes obedience, and the two together constitute the law of Christ in Galatians 6:2. Love of God and love of others and obeying the commandment of Christ to love others as he loved us comes together, and that constitutes the law of Christ. You see, understanding that love is the essence of the law helps us to understand the Old Testament laws. When we read those laws, there's love behind the scenes motivating the giving of those laws. It's either a law that pertains to how we can love God properly by representing Him properly, or it's a law that pertains to loving your neighbor. For instance, there are laws that talk about how you're not to have mixed garments as far as things made out of two different types of materials. I would venture to say we all have garments on today that are made of mixed materials. Why do we do that? Why is that against God's law in the Old Testament? Well, in the Old Testament, we have to remember that they lived amongst people. They went into the land of promise, the promised land, the land of Canaan, and there were false religions there that were worshipped. And so, those false religions had their customs and had their things, and they had the mixed garments. And so to love God in that concept was to say, no, don't look like the people around you. These mixed garments are not showing a proper love of God. Now, that's when the nation was in that area. We no longer have a nation that is bound by the borders of Israel. We have a gospel that is going out to the world. So you're okay to have on your mixed garments this morning. Okay? But that's one where love of God is motivating behind the scenes. And then, of course, there's other ones where it talks about on top of your roof, you're to have basically a guardrail around the top of your roof. Why do you have a guardrail around the top of your roof? Because you love your neighbor. You don't want them falling off the roof. You might want your wife to fall off the roof, but you don't want your your wife is your neighbor. Right? So all those Old Testament laws are motivated by love. And so the application for us, when reading the Old Testament law, it is helpful to ask, how is love for God or others expressed in this law? Because all of those laws depend upon love of God and love of others. Then Paul goes on in Romans 10:13. The first part of the verse, he says, love does no wrong to a neighbor. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. The word wrong there means harm or injury or evil. Some synonyms for harm, for wrong. Harm, injury, evil. So love does no harm to a neighbor. Love of others doesn't lead to hurting them. But it also does not lead to sin. You see, love doesn't lead to immorality. That's not commit adultery. That's summed up in love. Well, my love for my spouse drives me not to commit adultery. So, love has nothing to do with you breaking your covenant with your spouse by having an affair. You see, love doesn't lead to immorality. Love of self is what leads to sexual immorality. It also leads to the taking of property. I want that, so I'm going to take it. You shall not steal. It does not lead to sexual immorality. It does not lead to murder. You see, love doesn't do harm to others. Selfish motivation says do that. Now, just because someone has a desire for something doesn't mean that it's a good thing that should be allowed. In other words, love is not permissiveness. Parents understand this, right? Love is not permissiveness. We don't just let our kids do anything they want to just because they want to. We set boundaries. And we do it out of love. Because we don't want to see them harmed. My mom used to like to tell the story. Now, I don't remember this. Okay? I was young. About 2, Mom said. But in the house we lived at, the road was pretty close to the front of our house. And I kept wanting to go play in the road. I know. Your pastor, you're just like, you're dumb, Pastor. I know. So I went up there and Dad went up and he got me and he brought me back. He told me no, and then I got up again and I went up there and one of them retrieved me. I don't know if it was Mom or Dad, and kept me from going in the road. And then the third time, Mom started to go get me, and Dad said, just wait a second. You let him go. And he waited till I got up to the road, and then he went and he grabbed me, and he spanked me. Now, he spanked me because a 2-year-old, you can't reason with a 2-year-old, right? A 2-year-old needs to understand, though, that this is wrong, and that this will, if I do this, pain is the result. And so my dad spanked me, and I remember my mom, she's like, oh, he spanked you. Now listen, my dad didn't abuse me, trust me, okay? I can't even remember getting a spanking from my dad after that. But he spanked me. Why? Because he cared. He loved me. And he needed to set a boundary for me. And guess what? When he brought me back that time, I didn't go back to the road. Mom said there was no problems with that after that. You see, sometimes love requires us to set boundaries. It's not permissiveness. It's not tolerance. It's not allowing someone to just do whatever they want, especially if it's sinful. Revelation 3:19, Jesus says this to one of the churches. He says, those whom I love, I reprove and discipline. So be zealous and repent. Jesus says sometimes when we love someone, we have to rebuke them. Hebrews 12:6 says this, for the love for the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. God sets boundaries for us. It's why you need to be committed to a local church. Because you need people who are willing to step into your life and love you and say to you, don't do that. That's dangerous. You need to have accountability in your life. And you need for somebody to be able to step in, because we all have blind spots, somebody to step in and say, no, don't. They need to reprove us and to rebuke us and to help us. How many of you like to be told you're doing something wrong? My hand's not going up. We don't like that. But you know what? If somebody loves me, they'll tell me. Right? I'll tell you this just to somewhat lighten the mood. If you're running around and you've got a booger hanging out of your nose, wouldn't you like somebody to tell you? I would. If you love me, don't let me go around looking like an idiot. Right? Well, listen. If you're participating in sin or you're in a dangerous position and somebody comes along and they tell you, thank God for them because they care enough to say something and then stop and repent and turn away from that. See, love of others does not do wrong to others. It works for their good. Remember, Jesus was very stern with people who felt they were religious or that they were righteous on their own, in their own deeds. He was very stern with the Pharisees and the scribes. But he was very gentle with people who knew they were sinners. So love is not tolerating sin. Christians are free from the law, but we're obligated to love others. Thank God that he loved us when we were unlovable. Because the Bible says love your neighbor, and it doesn't just say love your nice neighbors, right? I mean, we talked about the Samaritan who loved a stranger. Sometimes it's easier to love a stranger than it is to love the person you know, right? Because they're kind of ornery, quite honestly, and not very likable sometimes. But we're commanded to love them. And I love the passage, since you're in Romans, just turn back to Romans chapter 5, verse 6 through 10. And I'm going to give you the words that describe us so that when we read this, hopefully you'll appreciate the passage. But in this passage, God calls us weak, ungodly sinners who were His enemies. That's how we're described. Not how I like to be described. Right? But this passage, the central passage is He loved us when we were weak, ungodly sinners who were His enemies. And thank God He did. Look at Romans 5, verse 6. For while we were still weak, in other words, we couldn't save ourselves. For while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die, but God shows His love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And what He's saying here, from a human perspective, when someone's in the right, there's a few people that might die for that person to defend them. And there's a few more people that we would add that, you know, there's a few people in my life that I actually think it's more important for them to live than me. And so they're good people. They're more than just righteous in the fact that they're good moral people. There's actually some really good people out there. And I might die for them. I might give my life for them. Okay? So, from a human perspective, there's some righteous people out there that we would die for. And there's some good people. A few more people might die for them. But we're not those people. We're sinners. We're sinners. But God shows His love for us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Since, therefore, we've now been justified by His blood, much more shall we be saved by Him from the wrath of God. And that goes back to Romans 1:18, where He talks about the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against the ungodly and the unrighteous. And we've already been called ungodly back up in verse 6. So we needed saved from God's wrath. For if, while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of His Son, much more now that we are reconciled, shall we be saved by His life. You see, we were weak, ungodly sinners who were enemies of God. Yet He loved us. He died for us in order that we might be justified. And not only justified, we'd be saved and reconciled. What a God. What a God. He loved us. So love does no harm. Love should inform the way we treat others, our family, our friends, our spouses, those who are less fortunate than us, those who are more fortunate than us. People who are immigrants, whether they're legal or illegal, people from other cultures, people of other religions, people who persecute us, people who try our patience. Indeed, everyone we interact with, we owe them all a debt of what? Love that seeks to do no harm to them. It informs all that we do. Even our voting. The application. When dealing with a person, I must ask myself, will my actions harm this person? Will my actions harm this person? Because love does no harm. Now, all this focus on love, why? Because the tendency is for us to get focused on the law. And when we focus on law keeping, we can be in danger of focusing on the law while ignoring our neighbor. In Matthew 23, verse 23, Jesus said this to the scribes and Pharisees. Remember I told you He was very stern with them? He pronounces a woe upon them. He says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. For you tithe mint and dill and cumin. Now, those are very small spices. And tithing is giving to God's cause. And so it is an expression of love for God. And they were so concerned about showing their love for God that even these little spices that they got, they would tithe out of, take a tenth out of. He says, you're tithing mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law. Some laws are more important than others. And he gives them three, justice and mercy and faithfulness. He says, you're over here and you're tithing out of your spices and you're ignoring the fact that injustices are occurring in your community. That people are being treated unfairly. You are unconcerned with justice while you're over here with your spice rack. He says, your mercy. He says, you're not showing mercy to people when God has shown you so much mercy. You are unmerciful. But you're over here with your spice rack, tithing out this. Yet you're unwilling to be merciful to others. And then faithfulness. Faithfulness to God and faithfulness to God's people. And he says, these you ought to have done without neglecting the others. You blind guides, you're straining out a gnat and swallowing a camel. Weightier matters of the law. When we focus on law keeping, we start focusing on the law and we forget the motivation behind the laws. And so Paul is saying, hey, you're free from the law. You're free from the law. But you are indebted to your fellow man. Loving others keeps us focused on what's more pressing. What is weightier? What's more important? The person before me is more important than anything at that moment. The person whom we have an opportunity to help. The person who, as the Good Samaritan saw, needs our mercy. Loving others has this wonderful benefit that Paul mentions twice in this passage. In Romans 13:8, the end of the verse, he says, the one who loves the other has fulfilled the law. And then Romans 13:10 says, therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. See, love is not presented as a law to keep, but a debt that's owed. Love fulfills the obligations of the law. So we don't have to worry about keeping the law. We just need to worry about loving others. Christians are free from the law, but obligated to love. If you meet the obligation to love, don't worry. You've met the obligations of the law. Don't worry about law keeping. Concern yourself with loving the people you encounter in your life. Why are we obligated to love our neighbors? Well, we're obligated to love our neighbors because genuine love fulfills the demands of the law. We reflect God's character properly when we are motivated by love. We should live financially responsible lives, but just as we will always owe taxes, because there's two things that are certain in this world, right? Death and taxes. That's Benjamin Franklin said that. But just like we always owe taxes, so shall we always have a debt of love towards others, not just Christians. So Christians are free from the law, but obligated to love others. Love is a debt we owe every person. So now, you go pay your debts.